am very happy now to welcome the good folks from Wild Earth Guardians. We're talking to Jeremy Nichols, who is the Climate and Energy Program Director for Wild Earth Guardians, and Carol Norton, who is the Associate Director. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Hi, Mary Charlotte.
Great to have you. As always, it's nice to catch up with what Wild Earth Guardians is doing, and we've talked in the past about forests and rivers and prairie dogs and all kinds of things. Jeremy, you are the director of the Climate and Energy Program, which is working toward a totally renewable energy situation for the West. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, I mean, our big vision is for the world. I think that we understand that to meet the climate crisis head on and safeguard everything that makes the American West special, we need as much clean energy online as possible. And I think the reality is that at some point we need to be moving toward a 100% clean energy future to protect everything that we're working toward, you know, wildlife, wild places, wild rivers here in the American West. But really, this is a global issue. I mean, climate change is global. We're trying to do what we can on a local level and trying to further that change here in New Mexico and the Rocky Mountain West.
So the mixer that we're using right now to do this program is plugged into a socket which is drawing essentially coal power.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Coal power is a huge part of New Mexico's energy right now.
It is a big part, unfortunately. It's a big part of every Western state's renewable energy, or not renewable, energy portfolio. But states, you know, have taken some steps to try and address that fact. You know, New Mexico has been a leader in getting some proactive renewable energy policies online. It was one of the first Rocky Mountain states to adopt a 20% renewable energy portfolio standard, which does require that all electricity sold here in New Mexico, 20% of that come from renewable sources.
By when?
By 2020.
By 2020. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a long way off.
It's a little ways off. You know, clearly we'd like to see more progress made sooner rather than later. But it's a first step. And I think, you know, anytime we get a standard such as 20% online, it just gets us closer to the ultimate goal of 100%. 20% is 20% of the way there. Let's work toward another 20% after that. Let's work for another 20, another 20. Eventually, we're going to get to 100%.
So you're working on the developing a renewable energy blueprint for Santa Fe, and you're partnering with Sandia and Los Alamos National Labs.
Yeah, our role is more as convener at this point. You know, we're working to bring together the labs and a number of small businesses to come up with a model that can help us better understand what we need to do on a local level to, you know, meet this renewable energy imperative that we have before us right now. Obviously, there's a lot of different interests, a lot of different goals. Wild Earth Guardians, we have a vision of 100% clean energy future. That's not necessarily what's driving this process. I think, above all, what is driving this is a shared goal of making it as easy as possible to develop renewable energy and getting the right policies and the right technologies in gear, in motion, to make sure that we can make progress on that in the near future.
What do you think are the most promising sources of renewable energy?
You know, here in the American West, wind and solar in particular are just phenomenal potential there. Here in the Southwest, we have the greatest solar energy potential of anywhere in the United States. You know, we do need to take full advantage of that to meet not just New Mexico's energy needs, but the West and even the entire country's energy needs. I mean, really, we have such a large potential with the wind and solar that exists here now. But what we need more than anything are the policies that encourage development of those resources. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why we're our vision is 100% clean energy future. We may not get there tomorrow. We may not get there 5 years, 20 years from now. But we need to know where we are ultimately going. And I think the sooner, you know, we can get policies in place that promote more, that get us above 20%, get us closer to that 100%, the better.
I think one of the real problems that we're facing is changing the status quo. The status quo is mm-hmm. very fossil fuel intensive, and there are a lot of political ramifications of that. Namely, the coal lobby and the other fossil fuel lobbies are so strong, and there are so many subsidies and giveaways and basically laws in place and favors in place to keep them just the way they are at our peril.
Yeah, you know, right now fossil fuels and coal in particular is dirt cheap. You know, utilities have no incentive to shift to renewable energy right now. You know, I do believe that PNM, for example, they don't care where the electricity comes from. They just want to generate electricity in the most cost-effective way possible. And, you know, they have shareholders that they're responsible to. You know, our task is to help make renewable energy more competitive with coal, help both make coal more expensive and make renewable energy more affordable.
How do you make coal more expensive?
Well, I think the most important thing that we need to do to make coal more expensive is to make sure that the price takes into account the true cost of both coal mining and coal burning here in this country. You know, coal-fired power plants are the biggest source of carbon dioxide in the United States. Carbon dioxide is fueling global warming right now. There is a cost associated with global warming. Coal-fired power plants are also the biggest source of mercury emissions here in this country. Mercury takes a huge toll on the environment and on public health throughout this country. You know, here in New Mexico, pretty much every lake and reservoir is impaired right now because of mercury pollution, and that has primarily come from coal-fired power plants.
It would be interesting to link healthcare reform to a taxation on the negative effects of pollution.
Right, right. Yeah, well, I mean, there is a public health cost, and you know, we know what the benefits of, for example, clean air are. The EPA has actually quantified many of those benefits, and you know, time and time again, we find that the benefits of clean air far outweigh the cost of achieving that clean air. So, you know, the cost of retrofitting a coal-fired power plant is nothing compared to the public health benefits. And that just shows you, you know, right now, we as citizens are bearing that cost, you know, in increased health care and environmental cleanup right now. And the coal industry, unfortunately, is getting away scot-free. And so part of, you know, what we need to do is to force the coal industry to take into account to bear the burden of those costs. And in addition to us trying to take steps to make renewable energy more affordable. And we can do that in a variety of ways. I mean, part of that is just getting more renewable energy developed, getting more innovative technologies in line, and, of course, getting the policies in place that encourage that development. And, you know, right now in New Mexico, we're at a 20% renewable energy portfolio standard. That's great, but it's not actually sending the signal that we need to truly shift away from coal. We may be getting more renewable energy online, but we're not exactly getting away from coal. The trick is to ratchet up that renewable energy standard as much as possible. And really, once we start getting to 50% or higher, that's when we're really going to start seeing the shift away from coal into renewable energy. So, you know, it's a lot of synergy that's going on here. And the economics of it are somewhat complicated, but at the same time, fairly straightforward. The more expensive coal is, the more the cheaper renewable energy becomes.
That's why we think Wild Earth Guardians can have a role, because we can work on both sides of that issue.
Right, right. And as part of the Climate and Energy Program, you know, we take kind of a two-pronged approach to the climate crisis right now. We need to get away from fossil fuels, but we can't just say bad, 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 bad. We have to have solutions.
Yeah, that
out
doesn't
there.
Work so good, does it?
It doesn't work so good.
It doesn't
no.
work on anybody.
No, nobody likes a nagger.
So we
no.
will nag, and we do, and you can we can talk about some of our litigation that we've been doing, but we also have to have the other side.
Exactly. I mean, if we're not working towards solutions or getting the alternatives out there considered and making movement toward the renewable energy end of things, then we're not really going to get anywhere anytime soon. So we do need to play both sides of that issue. And that's important, because we do need to call out fossil fuels. They're clearly taking a toll, but at the same time, we need to be pushing those solutions so people understand that we do have a path forward here, that this isn't just about shutting everything down and then saying, well, now what? We say, no, let's shut the coal-fired power plants down, because we have all this wind and solar potential. We have these policies. We have the intellectual capital. We have the drive to make this happen.
What's cool about Doable Renewable, the campaign that it advocates for...
That's very cute. Doable Renewable.
We have a great organizer who comes up with great names, I have to say. What's great about Doable, or what's interesting about Doable Renewable, is it's a unique partnership. It takes... we're working with government, Los Alamos National Labs, as well as Sandia. We're working with the local businesses. Shout out to, you know, our friends at Positive Energy and at Cedar Mountain Solar. And then we have and then we're convening it together to make something that is possible, or show that it is possible.
Let's talk about solar for a second. There is the solar kind of solar panels that everybody puts on their roof, or we would like everybody to put on the roof. And then there's utility scale solar, which means having a, I guess, a big open area that's sunny. Mm-hmm. What balance of those things are you talking about when you talk about solar energy?
Well, you know, in a perfect world, we would love for all our solar energy needs to be met with solar panels on rooftops, covering parking lots and other structures.
You know, I've just been doing the calculation.
Right.
What is the size of a parking lot?
Yeah.
And how many parking lots do we have in the city of Santa Fe? And what, you know, I've been trying to actually do the math on that. I haven't quite gotten there yet.
And it would be interesting to figure that out, because I think we'd find that there's a huge potential there, you know, as far as installing solar panels. Unfortunately, the way our energy policies are set up, it doesn't encourage that kind of renewable energy development. And in fact, it discourages it, because it, you know, as PNM would say, it erodes their revenue. And they have been guaranteed a right to make a reasonable rate of return on providing electricity for people. And, you know, their response would be, well, if we start developing distributed energy and eroding our revenue right now, it would force us to limit people's access to the power that we provide. And given that they are the biggest utility here in New Mexico, you know, there's big social ramifications there. So, you know, on the one hand, okay, let's deal with that. Let's change that. Let's make it work. But we're a little ways off from that. So on the other hand, what do we do in the meantime? Because we need to get as much renewable energy online as possible now to make it cheaper, to make it more affordable, to actually have an impact on the climate crisis. So what do we do? I mean, I think that in the near term, it may mean that we get behind less than ideal solar energy developments. For example, utility scale renewable solar energy developments in undeveloped lands, not necessarily wilderness lands. But
why is that less than desirable?
Well, because obviously we have an ideal here, and I think the ideal is let's take advantage of existing development to develop renewable energy. Let's use rooftops, parking lots, places that have already been impacted. Let's limit the footprint that we have here on this earth right now.
Oh, I see. So if you take undeveloped land that bunnies and antelopes and everybody are living on, then you're doing a little bit of environmental degradation.
Well, exactly, and I think
but still nothing compared to coal mining.
Well, and you know that's you know, nothing compared to coal mining, nothing compared to coal burning, but at the same time, you know, we do have an impact on this earth, and I think in anything that we do, whether it's renewable energy development, or you know, even small things like gardening or farming, you know, we need to minimize the impact that we have on the surface of this earth. I mean, you look at our cities right now and what they have done to the landscape. I mean, it's a pretty significant impact. Now, we're not going to be able to change our cities, you know, to you know, we can reduce their footprint in some ways, but we're not going to be able to scale back, you know, Albuquerque and turn it into a town of 20,000. You know, that's just not going to happen. So what do we do to take advantage of that development to help benefit the environment overall? And that's where, you know, distributed energy, that's our ideal here. But
so distributed means a little bit here, a little bit there, as opposed to one gigantic power plant.
Exactly. Or like, you know, putting solar panels on every rooftop instead of having a centralized solar energy or solar panel array out in the middle of the desert.
Or maybe some of both.
It's funny because you've actually hit on one of Wild Earth Guardian's strengths, because we have a climate and energy program that's advocating for renewables and a wild places program that's advocating for wild places, and a wildlife program advocating for wildlife. We have these conversations all the time. And
yeah.
So by the time we get to the public, we're able to speak with knowledge about what's going to make the most sense, which has the least impact. And we're willing to look at a big picture to make sure that we understand all the ramifications of what we're proposing with renewables.
I think there's a real something that needs to be pointed out here, which is that when you have industries that have massive government subsidies and industries that have, as you mentioned before with PNM, essentially guaranteed profit, those things are absolutely antithetical to the level playing field of free market capitalism. And if you were to really, truly level the playing field and put free market capitalism to work on the energy industry, it might really come out in a lot faster than we think that renewables would be more profitable.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting way to look at it. I mean, we try and, you know, keep our focus on what we need to confront the climate crisis and to safeguard everything that makes the American West special. And however we need to do that, let's just do it. You know, people have concerns about the monopoly that PNM maintains over you know, our electricity. And some people would say, well, we got to change that. And there's validity to that. But at the same time, you know, if PNM tomorrow decided it was going to go to 100% clean energy, we wouldn't have a problem with that.
Right.
That gets us to where we need to get to. So, you know, we're trying to retain an open mind. We're not, you know, we're not driven by ideology. We're driven by this simple fact that we need to address the impacts of climate change to safeguard everything that we value.
Let's talk just for a moment, because we haven't talked about it on this show for a while, which is the path that we walk down if we don't do anything, or if we just leave things the way they are. What does that look like?
Well, first of all, the Southwest is ground zero for climate change. The models show of the three locations that are going to get hit the hardest are the coast, water rising.
So cities vanishing under waves, yes.
We've all sat on the at the ferry building in the San Francisco Bay. Not going to be there
anymore. Not going to be there. The entirety of South Florida.
Gone. The Alaska, because they'll lose its glaciers. The tundra, I mean, unimaginable consequences. Then the Southwest. And
Let's not forget melting of the permafrost.
Exactly. The Southwest, you're feeling it already. I mean, if you raise tomatoes, then you know that your tomatoes you never get tomatoes in October in Santa Fe. Now we do. Our runoff comes a month earlier than it used to. It's happening right here, right now. It's only going to get worse.
And so one thing it means in the Southwest is significantly less water.
That's what the models are showing.
I laugh because, you know, it's a major change, and it's not funny, but it's daunting, and it's almost unrealistic to think about what the Southwest is going to look like if we let climate change continue unchecked, and if we don't make a bold effort now to get us on track toward you know, cutting greenhouse gases like Governor Richardson has directed, you know, 75% reduction in greenhouse gases by 2050. You know, if we can't make that, then we're going to be in a world of hurt here. And it just, you know, it underscores the imperative that we're dealing with.
What are some of the litigations that you are involved in, Carol Norton, Wild Earth Guardians?
You know, Jeremy's going to be able to speak to him much more closely than I am, as he works directly with our chief, our staff attorney on the work that we're doing.
Jeremy Nichols.
I think one important example of what we're doing is working to hold the oil and gas industry accountable to safeguarding clean air up in northwestern New Mexico in the San Juan Basin, an area that's just been hammered by fossil fuel development. And, you know, one of the ways that we're seeing that impact come to bear is air pollution. You know, right now the San Juan Basin is on the verge of violating federal health limits on smog. This is big city pollution up in northwestern New Mexico, and it all goes back to the fossil fuel development up there. So we have filed suit against the BLM, the Bureau of Land Management, and the U.S. Forest Service over their failure to ensure that this development is limited such that it can protect clean air and public health. Unfortunately, they've refused to take any responsibility there. So we've had to go to court. But, you know, the goal is to, you know, as I mentioned, make sure that the true costs of fossil fuels come to be, that they're addressed both by the federal government and by the fossil fuel industry here. And really, above all, this is about keeping our health, keeping our environment safe and healthy.
I think the general point that you're speaking to is this is something that goes into many, many different areas of our lives, which is when you have private industry providing a product and then taxpayers cleaning up the mess that product makes, you have a kind of imbalance and you've got a problem.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, if the region does eventually violate federal health standards, the state is going to have to spend an inordinate amount of resources on developing a cleanup plan. And yes, industry will have to bear some of the costs of reducing air pollution, but by and large, it's going to be the federal government and the state government doing the lion's share of the work to make sure that that cleanup happens. And that's just irresponsible. I mean, we know things are bad now. Let's clean it up. Let's not wait for the train wreck to happen. Let's slow things down, slow that train down, and make sure that we have a sense of where we need to go.
So you have a suit against the Bureau of Land Management.
Yeah, in the Forest Service right now. And that's in motion, you know. And again, this is about clean air. It's about public health. It's about holding the fossil fuel industry accountable.
On a completely different note, you also have some other things coming up. There is a screening of the film tomorrow, Wednesday, September 16th, from 6 to 8 at REI here in Santa Fe in the new Rail Yard District. Lords of Nature, what's it about?
Lords of Nature is a product of Greenfire Productions. It is a one-hour film, and we'll have a one-hour panel afterwards where people will be able to ask questions. It addresses the question of whether we can live with carnivores and really the role that carnivores play in the ecosystem and what would happen if we don't learn to live with these carnivores. So you'll see amazing footage of wolves and cougars, just beautiful. It raises issues in a variety of different ways, and then we'll be able to talk about it afterwards. It should be a really fun, interesting night.
So we're talking about big, wild cats and dogs.
Big, wild cats and dogs. We love them very much. There are many different kinds of carnivores. Another carnivore that we protect is the black-footed ferret. But in this case, we're talking about those top-level predators that go after, that create a cascade of events in the ecosystem that make the whole thing healthier. So
what can you explain a little bit of that? I think that's something that I think is just very interesting.
Okay, so I'm going to do this in a way that biologists who are listening will just cringe, but the big picture is that you get wolves back in the landscape. The wolves start chasing the elk, deer, the other ungulates around. They stop hanging around in the meadows being the meadow potatoes that they've learned to be but never really were supposed to be.
Meadow potatoes.
Yes, and then they go up into the trees. The trees are able, along this riparian, the river areas are able to grow. The trees grow up. It provides shade. It cools the water. The water can sustain fish.
Wait, what is it that makes the trees grow?
The elk and deer not eating them.
Oh, okay.
Because the elk and deer are now up in the trees where they belong, not hanging out.
So instead of being meadow dwellers, they become forest dwellers.
As they evolved.
Which is how they evolved. Okay. And then the river areas grow and fish swim and all that.
Insects come back. Not something necessarily, well, we do want them, of course. And so the whole cycle just becomes much more healthy. It becomes incredibly healthy. It's called trophic cascade.
Biologists, what's wrong with that?
Maybe they'll call in and let us know.
So that's part of what this Lords of Nature screening is about. I mean, I think it becomes very political in areas where there is ranching and where there are livestock.
Yes, absolutely. And that's particularly true here in New Mexico because we have a wolf reintroduction program that, unlike the wolf reintroduction program in the Northern Rockies, where you have a huge tract of protected land, Yellowstone National Park, we don't have that here. There is ranching across the entire area where the wolves are.
Even on public lands?
Entirely. Well, yes.
Even what we're talking about is public lands.
Public lands, yes.
And so have you been showing films like this in those areas?
This particular film has been. We work with a number of organizations in New Mexico, one of which is down in the south part of the state, and they just did a showing in Las Cruces and another in Silver City and had great turnout. And creating that a forum for that discussion, a safe place where we can see what values we share. We love the wilderness, we love our families, we all need to make a living, and then work off of that to create something that's possible for all of us it's been very effective.
Wild Earth Guardians, so that is the Lords of Nature film screening tomorrow night at REI. They have, what do they have, a wall there for film screenings?
They have a community room.
Oh, okay.
Which is just so they share it with all of us. It's great.
And it's a free event. Anybody can come. 6 to 8 REI here in Santa Fe. And you also have a big gala coming up. It's your 20th anniversary of protecting wildlife here in the West.
It is. We were formed in 1989, and We have been working to protect and restore wildlife and wild places for the last 20 years. We are pretty excited. We're going to honor Sam Hitt, who was the founder of Wild Earth Guardians 20 years ago.
When it was called Forest Guardians.
When it was called Forest Guardians, that's correct. For people who have attended, they know it's an unbelievably fun night, and we've added dancing this year. So we have these irresistible...
Did you have something to do with that?
A little bit. It was...
I'm outing you as a dance maniac.
It was a staff decision. We have a silent auction. We have a live auction. We have the dancing at the end. We have beautiful food. The businesses in Santa Fe are phenomenal. To all of the nonprofits, I'm sure, but it just feels like it's inspiring how great the Santa Fe business community is and how they support us. I mean, places like 10,000 Waves are giving us beautiful packages, and it's going to be stunning and fun.
And that's on Friday, September 25th at Bishop's Lodge. It's at 6:30 just a little bit north of Santa Fe, and you can buy tickets by calling Wild Earth Guardians at
505-988-9126. You asked earlier, Mary Charlotte, what would happen if we didn't do anything about climate change, and that's a question that Wild Earth Guardians wrestled with for a year or more a couple years ago, and we decided that it was a question that we never wanted to answer it. And so that's when we began our climate and energy program 3-4 years ago. We realized that everything else is moot without addressing what's happening around us in our climate. So it's been a great 20 years, and we'd love to celebrate it with Santa Fe.
And people can also look up Wild Earth Guardians on the net. And I want to thank you both very much for being here. Jeremy Nichols is Climate and Energy Program Director, and Carol Norton is Associate Director of Wild Earth Guardians.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at the email radiocafe@ksfr.org. We are podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org. You can hear the show there anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, and you can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, the Jazz Experience.